From the Artist's Mouth with Emma Talbot and Luke Routledge on the 25th of September 2020.
We live?
Yeah.
All right, hi everyone. My name's Gavin Wade. I'm director here at Eastside Projects, and we're going to do a bit of a walk around. The shows are almost finished. I've got Emma Talbot here with me.
Hello.
And we'll also go and see Luke Routledge's show. He's hiding somewhere in the back of the gallery. Strange matter, and so we're going to point out some things, hopefully give you a bit of an insight and just give you a bit of a feel for this new very big installation that we've been setting up over the past couple of weeks. We open next Friday, so we're being quite well organized at the moment, and we'll try and keep our distance and be safe in the space here. So I'll give you just a little bit of an intro to Emma Talbot. So Emma is based in London. She was born in the Midlands, although I think grew up in London a lot of it really, but also studied here in Birmingham at Margaret Street. And we showed some of Emma's work back in, I think, 2015 in Birmingham show, when we tried to give a sense of like, what is Birmingham? What is Birmingham art? Who are Birmingham artists? How do we bring things together to make a show that is Birmingham? And we thought it was interesting to have an artist like Emma, who has been in the city, has made some work about being here, about, you know, I think her paintings say a lot. They've got a lot to say. They tell us things all the time. And that's what I think is really fascinating, to say, how do we make a bigger exhibition? And how do we support Emma to make something new here in the space? So we invited Emma maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago, to come and make the show here, and we got rudely interrupted by the pandemic. So we were meant to open these shows in May. So I think this, we'll just explore a little bit about actually the fact that this work was going to tell us something about a fictional future, and there's the pandemic has turned around this exhibition for us quite a lot. So we can try and explore that a little bit. Yeah. There's quite a lot to unravel, so bear with us, I think. So Emma, so we've got the title here, When Screens Break, and we're thinking of just talking about that starting point, I suppose, how we began this exhibition with that idea of a moment when all of our screens might break, a moment when we lose our reliance on this thing that you're watching now.
Yeah, I think I was thinking about what I had a sense of our period of time having a kind of sort of dread attached to it, like there could be a disaster, like something terrible could happen. And I was thinking, what's the worst thing that could happen to us in the near future? And I thought the worst thing that could happen is that all our screens break, because we're so reliant on technology to just communicate with one another, that if we all didn't have our devices and our screens, then how would we do anything? Because everything's been sort of taken over by technology to help us, but we'd be bereft. So I was wanting to imagine some point in the near future where we would be so networked into a super system that we might not need devices anymore. That we'd be like somehow networked already, and that it made me think that the devices were actually a lure to sort of seduce us into being really, really involved with technology, like totally integrated into a technological world.
Yeah.
So I was thinking about this kind of intimacy and this sort of very sort of intimate relationship with devices and so on, like a kind of love affair.
Yeah, because it is part of your relationship with your family, with your children, with your loved ones, with you know, with every, it's sort of there as in between sometimes, isn't it?
Well, it's like a very clever way of drawing us in. This is what really the work is about, a couple of things. It's about our interior worlds, our private worlds, our ways of communicating, our real sort of heartfelt feelings, and how the technological devices kind of capture that for us. They become the space that we put that into.
But at the start, you really talked about this as a, in a way, as a science fiction idea.
Yeah.
And I know that now you don't, it's harder to think of it like that.
Yeah, because it was like that interior thing, but also that thing of like the external world, what is the external world and what are we in relation to it? And it felt like, because of COVID and lockdown, it felt like the issues that were coming up in this work were actually more about now, what we're experiencing now, than this imaginary future.
Yeah.
It became so much more really about our moment than about a sort of speculative fiction about what could be.
Yeah.
And that, I think some of the texts in the work, like we were looking at when we were installing and so on, that there are texts in the work that are about whether you actually touch something, whether you're actually, this one, which says touching without touching, simulated frictions, viewing without really seeing, knowing without experiencing. It's like what we're doing now. We're doing something online to an audience of people who aren't with us in the physical space.
I mean, it feels that as we go, if we go, start going around into the show, you begin, it's like it is telling us about exhibition making, about your art making, and about the world at the same time. I think that's what's...
It's about the condition of all of us, as well as the condition of seeing the work. But it's a circle, should we say this? It's like a big, big, big circle with another circle inside of hangings. So this is conceived like a world.
Yeah, let's go in.
Circular space. And on the outside are these kind of ideas of networks, what networks might look like.
And but the different sides tell different stories.
Yeah, so this
stories
one
well.
Side is about networks and how we got sort of drawn into this thing of a network that we don't even know what a network looks like, but this sort of space of connection. And the other side is about how we were drawn away from the tangible world, so that like now it's sort of not very safe for us to be tangibly alongside one another.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that's sort of come true.
But that's the shock, isn't it? In here, you like, when screens break, is the shock moment where you realise, I've forgotten how to communicate with people, how to what touch is anymore.
Yeah.
And now we just feel it. I think that's what's interesting. I think you could feel it from in the work, but now it's amplified.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. It's like it's sort of made itself even more sort of prescient, maybe. And then there's this transparent voil that's like a screen, like the idea of a screen, like that you're inside a space where everything is smashed when you go into the centre of the space.
And we're also, like, we're really inside your painting as well now.
This
is what I like in here, that we're in the artwork.
Yeah.
And it is a... It's like this membrane.
It's quite important to me to think about how something like painting operates now in the 21st century. So to think like images and text, and that they operate in very different ways for us as 21st century people than it might have done in previous eras.
Yeah.
So to think about, you know, it might be an environment that you go into and short bits of text are a bit like the text that we're reading, you know, on our phones anyway. Or
so you think the way that you've come up with this form of the sequencing and the text is also a response to that changing technology, how we read and see.
The way we view images, the way we read things, the way we understand and gather information. It's, you know, it's really important for me to kind of really think about what fits with our way of seeing the world.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what I was kind of thinking about. What's it like to gather information not in one direction?
Yeah.
So you walk around it and you kind of almost like you're scrolling through something on the internet and you're picking out different things at different times.
And then we do the next big leap in here. Now that we're inside the artwork, this is what this is a totally different interior to what Emma imagined and what we thought was going to happen within this exhibition. There was going to be more of a sculptural presence in the centre.
So originally the plan was that you would come in through these painted hangings and you would come into this physical space and be with a 3D piece that was like a platform that was a smashed screen.
Yeah.
And because of what happened in lockdown, which was, first of all, I was unwell, so I couldn't go to the studio, but also I couldn't get things fabricated.
Yeah.
So, and anyway, in between time, I started teaching myself to make animation. And then I realised what I'd like to happen would be that the animation could be present in the work.
Yeah.
Because it would tell the narrative of the subject of the work in another mode.
Yeah, it's like another layer inside.
Yeah, right. So you've got these kinds of layers of the narrative. And so in a way, there were this kind of idea of what would be physical was sort of put to one side. But then in deciding how to put that into the space, how do you place the animation and the screen in the space, then in our conversations, we talked about there being a physical presence.
Yeah, that's really important. Nice. Yeah, we love these figures. I mean, the other thing you can't hear, because we've turned the sound down, but there is quite a big sound in the space that feels like it's part of what it sounds like to be in this new reality somehow. And that was something that we talked about before. When it was going to be the sculpture, you had already made a version of a soundtrack to go in the background. And it's been amazing to see that those sounds become part of the animation, or the two animations, and how they work across the space.
The sound was something that I was developing anyway in my work in installations to give an atmosphere to the work. So that you would read the work, but in a kind of conditioned atmosphere, you know, to give a kind of feeling of the work. And then it felt like the animation carries sound, but that sound importantly spills into the space.
Yeah.
So that you know, you can attach it to the animated images, but you also get an atmosphere.
I mean, on this scale, you get that sense that when you're on the outside, you can hear the sound, but you don't know yet where the sound comes from.
Yes.
So as you're entering in, there's a bit of unknowing, and gradually, and then finally you see with the work, and you can sync the sound up with what's happening in the animation.
And it's important to me that you're exploring as a viewer. You know, you don't see everything at once. You have to go in, you have to kind of read and investigate, and you have that experience of finding out what the work is, rather than it being too evident all in one go.
And also,
to have this space to think about.
Yeah.
You know, to be able to imagine that, how might you use that space?
Yeah, I think you've sort of maxed the space. You've gone as far as we can go, like the maximum scale.
And you let me.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
And then we should go out the other side. So we've come into the centre, and now we go out around the other way, back through the layers. And then we've treated the surrounding space differently as well. So we were talking about Emma wanting to put drawings into that space, which the drawings connect with the animations as well as the paintings.
Yeah, the drawings are the basis for the animation. So all the animations are made from cut out, my drawings cut out.
Yeah.
And animated. So some of the drawings here appear in the animations. But there is this question all the time in the work of what's physically present, what's physical, what's not present, you know, what's real, what's not real, what's an illusion, you know. So to have the drawings here physically is quite important too.
Yeah, and that's why we started treating the walls really differently as well, so that they have this sprayed haze, openness, virus, spreading, other gases and forms in there, which is just to take away the heaviness in a way of the walls as well as anything.
Something so solid.
Yeah. And it's that's like so it's got cloud. This silver layer on top of it. And that's been a really great thing to test out and work out how to do and make happen. So yeah. And then we've got the final animation over here. We're going to fix those cables. It's not all done yet.
Work in process.
but actually, this animation was the first one.
Yes.
The first longest. Longer animation. Then when screens break is the newer one that's inside.
Matters of interest, and how was it achieved?
Oh. I'm talking to you. So the walls were. Because actually, like, when we were first describing it, I was always describing it like when you put paint on a toothbrush and you sort of flick it and flick paint on, and it wasn't that much more complicated, except that it's a big spray gun. So and then that's been, so we've worked with we've managed to find one of our technicians, our brilliant makers, fabricators, Matt Foster at Plain Structure, happens to have a brilliant spray gun, so we've been able to make that. And then Susie Osborne, our other awesome technician, has been able to work out how to put it on. They've got four layers, so it's I mean, in a way it's quite crude, but it's just effective, let's say. But it's quick in a way. Yeah, good question. So we're down, where are we at? Maybe it's good to look at one of the drawings that relates to the animation. Can we find a bit that... So that's part of one of the centre...
Yeah, so that's one of the central figures in one of the animations. And I'm making drawings all the time, so I'm not making drawings for the animations. I just have the drawings that I've made. Yeah. And out of those drawings that I've made, then I can start to take apart figures that I might want to animate.
Yeah.
And, you know, make them do different things by cutting them out.
I think that's really important, because that's how the whole show works as well. It's not like you create this story and a fixed structure and then it's just put into the space. I've seen that, you evolving it and it's growing and it changes, and even in the installing, it's like you don't know what it is until it's all here in the space.
It's not like there's a rigid plan that is set from the beginning, and that's because I want to keep making it. You know, I want to keep finding out what it is and being at that point of invention.
Yeah.
So all of the painted work, all of the large-scale hangings, they're painted. It's like I might have an idea of what I'm going to do, but I don't have all the texts written out.
Yeah.
I don't have all the images already planned. I just make them as I go along.
It's interesting to realise that that's a generative structure rather than... Because when you see it, it's this narrative that holds together. So it looks like that's planned, but it's actually... The forms are generative for you, aren't they?
Yeah,
you just
definitely.
Keep going with them.
Yeah, and the texts are quite often a kind of train of thought. It's like capturing what I'm thinking as I'm making it. So that for someone reading it, hopefully it feels like that. It's not telling you what to think. It's sort of almost like talking to you about a kind of train of thought or thinking around a set of ideas.
Yeah, I mean, because I've always liked the way that they play off the comic form as well. So, and I know that it's not actually one of your references, but but the form of it, that idea of the thought bubble and the speech bubble, and that realization that it is happening in your head is quite nice. You are speaking in my head. You know?
But that's what I mean about the way we read and think and exchange now. We exchange in text.
Yeah.
Text form.
Yeah.
These sort of texts that we send, messages that we send to each other, are like the texts in my work. It's like, I am thinking this, and it's my voice at this level telling you what I'm thinking, and we're sharing like that all the time. So I want the work to be quite like that, like everyday communication, but also very reflective, you know, really thinking about what are the issues that really affect us today.
It's a curious feeling of being in someone else's head somehow. As an artist, I guess you accept some, I don't know, do you feel like you just embrace that? It just happens.
Yeah, because I think all the figures are always these female figures, and they're based on my idea of myself from inside.
Yes.
So they're quite a consistent figure, like a character maybe.
Yeah.
But they have no faces, so they could also be anyone. So it's like this idea of what conveys a set of ideas. You know, for me, it really is about how, if we're at this point now, for me, as someone making things, how do I convey my ideas through images, through, you know, how do I want to do that? How should I do it? And that's the bit that's always, like, really exciting, is trying to think about how can this operate without feeling like it ought to do
something. I mean, even... like making the animation is a way to sort of circumvent the yeah. having to make physical spaces, yes. exhibitions at one point, but then yeah. it's interesting to bring it back in and make an exhibition with them.
Yes.
Reveal something else about them, it shows it again. So it still is, there's still quite an urgency within the work for it to be physical, to be laid out.
Yeah.
You know, you can't experience this in yeah. any other way. So
and that's the other thing, is that these are painted on silk.
Yeah.
So they're all on very, very light material, silk and voile. So this all packs up to be really tiny. You know, everything comes apart and it becomes really tiny, which is like thinking ecologically about how we transport things or how we, you know, yeah. how we might operate. That's something that kind of seems very important, to think this can be unpacked and built to be a very big installation. But it also can go back down to being something quite tiny,
mm-hmm.
which is like thinking, like having an idea that can become massive.
Yeah.
Or it could just be a fleeting thought that is packed away again. You know, I think that sort of level of it not being monumental in a really heavy way
yeah.
is quite...
And that's, you
yeah,
can totally feel that in the space, this lightness.
Yeah.
So it floats.
It's sort of, yeah, yeah. it's here, yeah. but it's not too solid.
Yeah, so we do want people to come and see the show as well and experience it, get yeah. in if you can. But you know, and as long as conditions are allowing us to, then come. But I think that is possible. Are there any other questions that have come through or no?
People saying they like the walls and they like the idea that it folds up small and like the light materials.
Yeah, it's going to be transported around the world. We hope. Let's see.
So when are we open, Gavin?
Oh, yeah, we're opening next Friday from 12 till 8 as a launch day. And you need to book in online. And, I mean, we're limited to only letting in about 10 people an hour. So, you know, two people at a time can go inside the artwork. So you can have a you know, really great intimate experience within the work, just you and the work. So, yeah. Thank you very much, Emma.
Thanks, Emma.
That's really great. That's really good, great insight. Okay, we're going to go over to Luke's room and he's going to see Strange Matter.
Oh, we've just got a question. What did you use to paint the silk?
It's acrylic.
Acrylic.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's a very easy answer.
Okay.
Come over do a little walk around as well, see a little bit more in here. This is Luke Routledge, so welcome. And Luke is a Birmingham artist, and that's what I think we're really proud to have Luke come in here and make this big show. This is Luke's first solo show, and you actually mentioned something to me yesterday. You said that this is the show you draw dreams that you'd be able to make after leaving college.
Yeah,
I think that's quite an interesting thing yeah. to hear and to yeah, to be able to say that it's good that you've been able to follow that through.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this is pretty much the idea I've had in my head since I left university. So yeah, it's brilliant to be able to make it and to be able to make it here at Eastside.
Yeah, holding on to that. That is of course. How long ago did you graduate?
8 years ago.
Okay.
So. Yeah, it's been a long time coming, and I've just carried on making my work, and yes, showing a few bits with you and showing them around the country.
I think that's what, but that those showing a few bits is actually, it's you know within that is that story. Like I've really enjoyed seeing a small work of yours, and then a slightly larger work, and yeah. then hearing you talk about the work and sort of learn more about what it is that you're making over time. And I think that's so important. So Luke has been an EOP member here at Eastside Projects for quite a few years now.
Yeah.
And it, you know, sometimes things happen quick and sometimes things take time to develop. And I think it's been really great to actually to even have the extra time yeah. to develop yeah. this exhibition with Luke.
Yeah.
And it also feels sort of really proud to be able to say that we've been able to help you make this because it feels such a big show.
Yeah, so yeah, I do value the support that ESP and EOP has given me over the years. Yeah, it's definitely been very encouraging.
Well, Well, I mean, I think it's just that idea of keeping in there and yeah. keeping updating yeah, and showing
keep,
the work.
Yeah, and keep going and showing
so
the work.
It was summer camp last year.
Yeah.
And I think it was the first time I'd really seen in the flesh one of the works with the animated parts, the elements moving.
That was the first animated one I did, really. Oh, no, it's not. I showed one in Manchester, which was a sculpture that moved up and down, which I think was the first moving thing that I wanted to do. And then by making that one, I then moved on to the one with the moving eyes. And like I said, these are the kind of works that I've wanted to make for years. And I've found the materials that I use, and through my job, I've learned how to use 3D printing, and it's kind of given me the scope to be able to, like I say, make the work that I've thought about making for years.
Yeah. So tell us a bit about how the strange matter idea formed then, because it's a great title.
Yeah, I just came across the name because I'd been thinking about these figures as kind of being inhabitants of another world. So like an overarching constructive world idea behind my work rather than just being isolated figures. And strange matter, it's this hypothetical particle that possibly exists in the universe. And if this was to come into contact with anything that's ordinary, it would turn it into strange matter. And I think that relates to my work, because they're kind of familiar-looking things, but they're like a distortion of reality.
Yeah, I like the possibly exists.
Yeah.
That's the that's the thing that feels like each one of these possibly exists.
Yeah, well, that's the idea, and that these figures exist within a possible world, which is obviously something in philosophy, but I do like the idea of thinking that they're existing in an alternate reality or alterverse or something like that.
Yeah.
And I think thinking about that, which has really come about in the last year or so, has really changed the way that I think about my work and kind of given me a scope to be able to just create anything.
Yeah.
Which is kind of what all of these little bits are. They're just all little aspects that contribute to this overarching world of these figures.
I think that's it. When you're just trying things out and seeing what happens, you found this structure of this like a campfire as the meeting point for all these different experiments in a way. And I think that was good. Over the studio visits that we did over the last year, it was interesting seeing that pulled together.
Yeah, I think that comes from, you know, it's like a traditional image, isn't it, of humans gathered around a campfire and the idea of like the great expansion and figures creating a society. So I've taken that idea of humans doing that, but transported it into my work and these figures living in this other place.
Yeah. So. What do you remember the names of them? I know that because I haven't got the bit of paper actually with all the titles.
Yeah, I mean,
what are the names? Introduce us.
Some of the names are a bit silly, but I mean, this one's called Mr. Strawberry. I think the reason's quite obvious because you can see he's sat on a strawberry.
You'll have to look at the strawberry, yes. So this is Mr. Strawberry. What's this guy?
This one is called Interspecific Trophic Owl Chain. And that is like, owls eat other owls and things like that in nature. And you could get the corpse of an owl, and inside it would have another owl, and within that would be another owl. And so there's this figure, and then he's controlling another figure. And if I could make the little puppet have another puppet, I'd do that. It's kind of an endless, strange look. Yes.
That's the next show.
Yeah, possibly. But I mean, between those two titles, it kind of shows the idea of how I'd title the work. Some of them are a bit maybe pretentious or whatever. But then some are just ridiculous, like Mr. Strawberry.
Is that sort of there in the references as well? Because I've heard you mention, I don't know, a range of things from cartoons to Bosch to kind of, you know, all sorts of places.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, I like to have like the difference between the humour or a really serious name. I don't want to be tied down to.
Yeah,
that's definitely in the references. I mean, the idea of the puppet originally came from listening to some podcasts about Plato's cave.
Okay.
And that's kind of where the idea of the installation came from as well.
Nice. Even the idea of the podcast about Plato's cave is already, it's a bit like Emma's layers of reality that you're going inside of and questioning itself at the same time.
Yeah, because I mean the sculptures are like a reflection of us in a way, and then the puppet again is a reflection of us and itself.
Yeah. And what about the animation that's happening over there?
So that is kind of another little snapshot into this idea of another universe. I've kind of thought of it as well as like a bubble universe. So there's all these different universes within each other.
Yeah.
And so the next iteration of a show or whatever could be from another universe that's something connected to these, but different. My partner Phoebe, she helps me with animations. I tend to draw them, and then Phoebe will animate them. I find it quite difficult.
Good partnership.
It is, yeah. Very good, yeah.
Thanks, Phoebe. That's great. And then this fire. Now, I know that you've worked hard on this fire.
I have worked hard.
Fire is one of the hardest things to make work a sculpture.
Yeah.
But I think you've done a good job of that.
Yeah, it's okay. It's pretty good. Just to act for the centre point, really.
Yeah.
I really like the spit.
And why is it an ordinary chicken that's on there?
I think it's ordinary. Phoebe made that as well.
Good assistance. Yeah, I think it's. Just think about what made you do this. The landscape. I mean, what led you to think of it being the campfire? What was that?
Well, I think it just gave the figures something to congregate around. I've always had this idea of a gathering of the figures, and it just seemed like the perfect thing, really.
Do you see it as expanding with more figures coming?
I mentioned to you before, about the idea of Dunbar's number, which is the amount of people that humans can maintain a relationship with. So I think I'm going to carry on making these things for a long time.
Yeah.
And that Dunbar's number is 150, so an aim would be to try and make 150 of these sculptures.
Great.
And then they would form this society or culture, wouldn't they?
Yeah. Is that something you would, because it seems like that they're finding out as you're going along, would you just wait and see how things go together?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's different ways of making these, like a constructive world, like what Tolkien would do or something like that. And you can either really plan it or you can just let it happen. And I think it's probably just let it happen and carry on.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of given me the freedom to make whatever I want. And if I was to plan it out too much, then I would just paint myself into a corner. Whereas with this, it just kind of gives me scope to do whatever I want.
Yeah.
And then, within the work, there might be little nods to other artists and things like that, and art history. Yeah.
Yeah. So tell us a bit about the making, because it is so, I mean, being next to it, you're really aware of every little bit is this made. Yeah.
Yeah. Someone's just asked about the materials as well.
All right. Yeah.
Talk a bit about the materials.
Yeah, so the main material is an air-dry clay that I make myself. So I'll make a wooden structure and then put aluminium or polyurethane or whatever on top of it. And then I'll mix this air-dry clay and kind of paint it on in batches. And I think that really gives me, the look I've been trying to get for years, which, you've got the figures, but then within them and on them, there's a painting, really, isn't there?
Yeah.
And I think there's always been that tension in my work between painting and sculpture. And with these materials, I've really found a way of making the things.
I quite like that about the way the figures are turned back to us. As you walk around, there's always one of them that you're looking at, the way this flesh and the skin and the texture and the colours is made. I think you become really aware of it because of that. There is a front and back.
Yeah, there's definitely a front and back to it. Yeah, but like I said, it's kind of this tension between abstraction and figuration, which I used to paint all the time, but now I've managed to find that in a sculptural form.
Yeah, it's really powerful. What about the electronics then? Is that something that you already knew how to do?
No, I didn't know how to do it at all, so I've learnt it all over the last year and a half, 2 years, I'd say.
Right.
And I've learnt pretty much all of it from YouTube and the occasional little bit from Reddit. And to be honest, a colleague at work, he used to make automata, so I've gone to him for advice all the time.
Nice.
But I've always had the idea of what if I could make one that moved? And now I can. Yeah. I think it really adds to them.
And is all of the stuff that you're using, the little circuits, is it all just very readily available?
It's all readily available. And then some of the components, they're 3D printed. Yeah, the electronics and that, it's all really easy. Not necessarily cheap, but it's not hugely expensive. And I haven't had to solder anything, so it's all plug and play, which is just easy. And it's quite easy code to use. It's very simple. It's just like making a website kind of thing. Yeah.
Tell us that we didn't do all their names yet.
No.
Remember what this one is?
Woman with ornamental bird. So, I mean, that's just...
That's a great name.
It's an obvious, kind of very descriptive title. I think just to the point, descriptive ones like that probably come from looking at people like Martin Creed and just titles them what they are.
Yeah.
And there's nothing fantasy about it.
Yeah. But then what's this one?
That one's called Green-Headed Water Wizard.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's got the divining rods, dowsing rods, and he's looking for water. He's obviously looking for it in the wrong place because he's looking towards the fire. But that's what they used to call people that would be dowsing water wizards.
Okay, oh, I didn't know that.
But then, I mean, that one, it's just come about through a Wikipedia search. So, the titles aren't, they're not massively important to me, but then if they do add a little bit, then it's good.
I think it's just the idea that they are a character and they have the name does add something else to it. So.
Yeah, no, they are all characters, and they're all, hopefully they're all different sculptures, and they're not all the same.
And the last one is something to do with his feet.
That's called Lithic Reduction Boots, and that's because she or he, they're in the process of napping a stone. So when you're splitting a stone, and that's known as lithic reduction, and she's wearing boots.
Okay. That's brilliant. Well, I think congratulations.
Thank you.
Are in order. It's looking really brilliant. Are there any other questions anyone wants to ask? Hope that's given a nice taster into the two shows. There will be more. There's actually we're going to do a session with Luke and Emma, both talking about their approaches to animation and how that's come about, for example, with Emma during lockdown, so we can delve in a little bit more during the show. So thanks very much, Luke.
Thank you.
That's really brilliant. I hope you will come and see the shows, and keep safe, and book in, and come along, and hope to see you soon. All right, thanks very much for coming along. All right, see you soon. Bye.